Welcome to Disciple City Church Podcast. My name is Jerry Wagner, founder and lead pastor of Disciple City Church in Dallas, Texas. Thank you for tuning in. Our desire is to unleash a family of healthy disciple makers in Dallas to reach the world. God bless you as you listen and consider subscribing so that you can listen to new messages each week. Thank you and have a God-filled day.
I am so glad to be with you today. So glad to be with you this morning. I'm glad that the Albuquerque's family and friends are here. This little cloud, y'all are great. Y'all are incredible. Glad you're here. I have something that I want to tell you. I got a lot of things going on, a lot of things to be excited about. I want to see if you have something similar. Man, Emmett is walking, talking. He's in City Kids right now. Brittany, are you here? Where is Brittany? She's around. Oh, she's just having a conversation kidless. Look at this. Okay. Incredible. But Emmett is talking and laughing and cheesing. I wish I would have put the picture up. He's like taking to this cheese thing that he's doing. It's the sweetest. But in the middle of Emmett growing up, getting bigger, all these things, there's this like lurking, looming shadow in the corner. Theo, 3.5, has all these complex sentences, is so big and considerate. He's crushing it. He can write his name by himself. It's ugly as all get out. It don't look much different than my handwriting. But there's this shadow lurking and looming in the background. Brittany and I have been doing this thing for a while, and things are really great, really sweet. We have a lot of cool things that are shaking. We're looking to move into the neighborhood this semester, and, you know, we've got sabbatical coming up this summer. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be so great. But there's this lurking, looming shadow hovering at every turn. Just started coaching. It's great. High ceilings, low floors. We're going to make it work. But there is this shadow. Do you hear what I'm saying? There is a dark figure that will not let up, has not gone anywhere. And you know this dark figure. You know this shadow. You just don't know it yet. You probably have some similar things. You've got highs that you could be celebrating. You've got the monotony, the mundane. But there might be something lurking, looming. Let me tell you what it is for me. About 2.5 weeks ago, I started struggling with anxiety. This isn't a joke. I was scheduled to preach this sermon before this happened, but for 2.5 weeks, I have had a consistent, just general anxiety disorder, just kind of looming, lurking. My kids are cute. Oh, I can't feel my feet, you know? I don't know. It's just been a really random, my chest is tight. And so, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on, what that means. I think that I've identified a couple sources. One, the pace of life right now is just a little bit too much. Brittany and I are constantly reassessing, trying to consider what could we do to slow that down. A weekly Sabbath isn't really doing enough. Probably need to add some other stuff. The other thing is sabbatical, which is a gift. 12 weeks. I'm not going to see none of you. You'll never see me. I'm going to be the dark shadow looming in the distance, though. But I will get to rest and rejuvenate and reconnect with God in ways that are completely disconnected from the like blinding pace of what ministry has been recently, which is cool. However, there's a lot of stuff that needs to get done between now and then. You know, a lot of projects in the work, different programs that need to get covered, different people that need to get considered. What do I do? And those two things, I think, have triggered the like constant go, go, go. I think my brain is just sending me a signal to say, something's got to give. And let me tell you, I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. I want you to hold on to that. I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. I'll give you one last piece. Last night, we're about to put the boys down, you know, daylight savings or whatever. So it's like, please God, early bedtime. And I go to put Emmett in his bed, and the crib sheet is in the dryer. but like the first run through the dryer, because you got to do everything on low and you do too many clothes at once, so you got to run it a few times through the dryer, so it's not ready yet. And I just immediately felt this crippling anxiety jump on my back, like I couldn't breathe. That's what happened. This is last night. I'm coming here honest. I'm not coming up here as some expert. I'm coming up here honest. And before you go psychoanalyzing me or trying to think of a way to fix my situation, that's not my point. My point is that I want you to know that I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. I want you to be able to say the same thing. And I bring this up not to ask you for help, though help is great. I want you to think about you. You know, this has only been 2.5 weeks for me, but a sense of stress, a sense of anxiousness creeps up on all of us. You may have some sort of an anxiety disorder. There are many. I think 1 in 5 Americans deal with an anxiety disorder. Women are twice as likely as men to struggle with an anxiety disorder. Last time I checked, 40% of Americans year over year are like more anxious. You ask 2 out of every 5, and they'll be like, I'm more anxious than I was last year. Anybody in here, if you were honest, you would say, I feel a little bit more anxious today than I did 2 years ago, 5 years ago. Something's got to give. I want to encourage you. You're not there yet, but you are on your way. You may have some concerns, some worries, some stress, something that causes you to feel anxious, or you may have anxiety. What do you do about that? What is the solution? Well, I can tell you, I'm not here to clickbait. I'm not here to tell you that I've got 3 steps to solving your anxiety. I'm not here to tell you that I can get you right in the next 90 days. I'm not here to really tell you much of anything other than what's true, and that you can know that though you may not be there yet, you can be on your way. Say, I'm not there yet. I'm on my way. I want to answer the question, how do I develop impenetrable peace? Like this peace that cannot be shaken. What does it look like for me to grow peace? What does that look like? We're going to land the plane on family ties. We're going to land the plane on Philippians. We're in Philippians 4, 6 through 13. Claire, thank you for reading it. It's also been in my on repeat. But what Paul does is he prescribes a way that we can maybe see our way through worry and anxiety into peace and serenity. Not a way out necessarily, but a way through. And so today, I got 3 simple moves. You will face anxiety. I'm going to call it anxiety. I'm going to use that as a term, though it may not be clinical. Maybe you have some worry, some stress, you feel anxious, or you have clinical anxiety. Wherever you are, I'm going to say anxiety. If that bothers you, come and tell me after. I'm just going to use one term, so I'm not up here hopscotch, jump roping. We're just going to keep moving, okay? Anxiety. You will face anxiety. However, you can learn peace. This is great news. You can learn peace. Oh, and by the time we walk out of here today, I hope that you have hope, because somebody in here feels hopeless. Like you can't see the way out. You can be okay, though you don't see your way out. And that's what this text is going to give us today. And last thing I'm going to do is say, how do I develop it? What does that look like? So let's start. You will face anxiety. Let's just call out the dark figure in the room. Say anxiety.
Anxiety.
Okay. If you're not in a season, don't worry. It may be coming. Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, before I had 2 kids, I couldn't spell anxiety. And now, for whatever reason, in this season, I spell it M-E. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just right here. But Paul starts chapter 4, verse 6. He says, the audacity. He says, don't worry about anything. All right. I'll see y'all next time. You know? Don't worry about anything. That's what he says. And at first, I'm like, the audacity, you know, just like, I can't believe that you would say it like anything. There's not even a little something, Paul. But he says, be anxious for nothing. I kind of jokingly bring this up because Paul was anxious. Even in this book, if you have a text, you can just flip back or look back at chapter 2, verse 28. Look what Paul says. He says, "For this reason, I'm very eager to send him, Epaphroditus, so that you may rejoice again when you see him and I may be less anxious." So Paul is telling me not to be anxious. What, does he get a pass? What's going on here? But then again, in a different book, 2 Corinthians, he's writing to them and he says this whole list. You read the list earlier in this series, but he says this stuff that he's dealt with. I've been beaten. I've been shipwrecked. I've been hungry. I've been all of this stuff. And at the end, he says, not to mention other things. Just like, Paul, dang. There's daily pressure, which is another term for anxiety, and my concern for all the churches, my anxiety for all the churches. It's the same word that's here. So Paul says, don't be anxious, don't worry, but he has some anxiousness. He's got some worry. So you can either hear this as, well, Paul is relatable. Paul can empathize with my situation. Or you could say, Paul ain't no expert. If he's got anxiety, then what is he saying that's going to somehow fix something for me? I don't understand. Well, let me just say I hear you, but also who he was echoing. You may be familiar with Matthew chapter 6. Jesus is teaching, and he says, "Therefore, I tell you, don't worry about your life." Sounds familiar? He says, what you're going to eat or drink, what you're going to clothe your body with, isn't life more than food and the body more than clothing. That is like the anti-gospel of a place like Dallas, where we spend so much on both of those things. I'm not throwing shade. I'm just saying, if we have worries, what are they connected to? I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But Paul echoes Jesus saying, don't worry. Don't be anxious. Now, let me tell you, this is not where the like see through it piece comes in. This is just where he vocalized that there's a problem. Let's dissect the problem a little bit. Biblically, what he means by anxiety is that it's something that has your attention and it triggers an emotion. So something that you care about now gets a little bit more intense. There's more concern around it. Maybe you worry about it. And to say worry, it might be like, well, that's negative. It just means that you're concerned. You're thinking about it. It's on your mind, and you're caught up. You want to make sure that this thing is in order. It's when something that you care about becomes a singular focus, where it crowds out other things, and it becomes weighty to you, and it starts pulling you down. That's what Paul means here in this passage. And the Christians in Philippi had plenty that they could be caring about, plenty of concerns. Their guy, Paul, who they love, who they are sending money to support, is in prison. They want to know that he's okay. They have persecution happening. They want to know that they're okay. Also, more than that, they've got a bunch of selfishness in the church house. It's causing disunity. And they're like, man, with friends like these, who needs anemones or whatever the Finding Nemo quote is. But those things, Paul knew, would be like weeds, that they would grow up in their garden and that they would crowd out other things. They would push out their better intended growth. And that is no less true for us. Whether you struggle with worry or stress or feeling anxious, or you have anxiety, wherever you are in that realm, the idea is that your inner world is disrupted. It is disordered. It is not as it is intended to be. It's not what God would want for you. And this may be seasonal. It may just be here to stay. Whichever it is, both of those things are attached to survival. Your brain is telling your body that if this thing doesn't get taken care of, you will die. That is what your brain is convinced about. If I don't get the dishes done, I will die. If I don't accomplish this project by this deadline, I will die. If my kid is not healthy, I will die. And so we spin our wheels trying to just figure out that situation. And that's fine, But the problem is that we're rewiring our brains, unless you already have this kind of chemical thing going on and maybe some meds could help. By no means am I going to say anything that undermines like having less stimulants or having therapy or slowing down your... All of those things are great. Probably address them a little later. But what I want to say is our brains are being rewired because we don't just have one thing. We have one thing that we focus on, and then maybe we move on to the next thing, and then the next thing. And our brains are constantly telling our bodies to release these hormones so that we can have the energy that we need to fight or flight, to survive. And that will slowly erode our mental health. And what I mean by mental health is like your actual brain and the way that your brain functions. Paul is addressing something that is supremely important for us, especially as Americans, the most anxious population. We are potentially killing ourselves, keeping up with the rat race, keeping up with a pace that is blinding. It is too much. Because I have a theory that our worry is proportionate to our hurry. We are moving at a pace that we cannot sustain, and it is causing us to develop something that has been called by psychologists hurry sickness. Hurry sickness. This is what's been said about it, or how it's been defined. Hurry sickness is a behavior pattern characterized by continual rushing and anxiousness. I like this definition better. A malaise in which a person feels chronically short of time. Does anybody in here constantly feel like you do not have enough time? And so, tends to perform every task faster and to get flustered when encountering any kind of delay. Would anyone in here say, ooh, this isn't like my WebMD kick for the day, but Ryan, that sounds a little bit too close to home. I'm gonna need you to move to the next point. I would posit that at least every single person in here has dealt with this to a degree. John Mark Comer said, psychologists tell us anxiety is often the canary in the coal mine. It's our soul's way of telling us that something is deeply wrong and we need to fix it fast. So what do we do? What is the way out of this? If you need to assess where you are, think about how you feel, think about how you think about how you behave. This is a psychosomatic thing. It's your brain and how you think. It's your body, how it presents. Maybe your tongue is just a little too often pressed to the roof of your mouth. Maybe your eye is twitching. Maybe you haven't let your shoulders relax in about 7 to 10 days. What do you do? Well, whether it's worry or anxiety, Paul urges proportionate practices to know that you will face anxiety, but you can learn peace. You can learn peace. This is what I love about what Paul says. I love this. He says, don't worry about anything. So he says, be anxious for nothing. Like, in no circumstance worry. In nothing. And then he says, but in everything. This is like so obvious. It's like, if I didn't make my point clear enough, let me just emphasize a little bit. Nothing, everything. I'm like, you are annoying me, Paul. Get out of my face. It's like if a friend told you this, you'd be like, pull up then, you know? Pull up. Paul, in his apostolic authority, actually has apostolic authority. Don't forget, this dude has been through it. He's been through everything. He has suffered through just about everything that you can, and he offers a transcendent prescription. Dr. Evans, down the road, says it this way. Every time we begin to worry, we should see that as a call from God telling us that it's time to pray. I just couldn't say it better. Like, let's go home. That's incredible. And the way Paul says it is present. Present your requests to God. Present means make known. Now, let me say the way that we do that. we make known by prayer. Paul gives three different words for prayer. I'll say it to you like this. Paul says whether you're praying or you're praying, you need to be talking to God. That's what Paul says. He says when it's normal prayer or when it's urgent prayer, we got to be talking to God. That's what he says. The way out of worry is prayer. Now, in our society, in our cultural moment, that just is like out the window. We don't even think about that for a second. I want to build on it, but please, just for the sake of argument, can you just hold on to it? Okay, let's just hold on to it. He also has the nerve to say, with thanksgiving. The nerve. I'm going through it, Paul, and you're like, yeah, be thankful. Like you're not hearing me, Paul. But here's what Paul is doing. Paul knows that the enemy would love to move you from being grateful to being grumpy. Like that would give him the most joy. He would throw a party if the enemy could move you from being thankful to God to being bitter or to doubting or to feeling a sense of debilitation, just being all the way defeated, all the way deflated. That's what the enemy would count as a win in your life. So if he can knock you off of being grateful, if you cannot find anything to be thankful for that God has done for you, or even just who he is, that you have access to him, that there's nothing that you have to do to come to him, if there's nothing that you can find, then the enemy maybe has a little foothold. And Paul wants to deliver you from the danger that's posed in leaving thankfulness, in leaving connection to God. Because we live in the information age. I bet that you could find out anything that you want to know in a matter of minutes. Most of you could put together this sermon and come up here and preach or present this information. You have access to this. You could find it. There's libraries. There's the internet. You could pay for stuff to get through. You could get whatever you needed. Information is there. That's part of our problem, though, is that we think knowing this truth is going to somehow help us. But the problem is Paul knows this, and he's trying to help us see this. Knowing that God knows what you're going through will not bring any sort of help or transformation for you. Paul says you're on your way. There's a place where you can go. You can learn peace, but you have to talk to God. Because knowing these truths is not what changes you. It is not what brings peace. God brings peace. Prayer is very simply conversing with God, connecting with God. I know Brittany. If me and Brittany never talk to each other, what do you think is going to happen to our marriage? It will absolutely fall apart. And I know her. I could act in ways that I know that she wants me to act. I could do the things that I know she wants me to do. I could leave notes and do all this stuff. But if I never speak to her, that's problematic. And the source of our life isn't knowing things about God. Ask Judas. The source of our life is actually being in relationship with God. Knowing him and being known by him. And I love that Paul doesn't just give us something to know. If you're worried, then know this about God. He says, if you're worried, then talk to God about it. Make that situation known. But God already knows it. Yes, but be known by him in it and know him in it. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Know him. And that will help you be on your way. And I love that Paul's promise is that the peace of God will do something. The peace of God. This is a little challenging right here, okay? Because this is me, okay? Paul doesn't say, and God will change your circumstances. Hallelujah. Where are all my grateful saints? That's not what he says. Paul doesn't say God will change your circumstances. Or in the words of Elder John, or just John, are we looking for relief or are we looking for rest? Do we want God to take us out of where we are, or do we want God to be with us where we are? Elizabeth Elliot said it best in her book, Keep a Quiet Heart. She said, and this is one of my favorite quotes of all time, please hold on to this, the secret is Christ in me, not me in a different set of circumstances. She cooked on that one. She did. And my question for you is, do you want that like all transcending peace, that peace that is just above anything that you could really comprehend, Is that something that you want? Because you can have that. Paul says the way to it is just simply prayer, talking with God. The problem, I think, is that I would rather spend a little bit more energy to try to find out a little bit more information to see if I could make a little bit more sense of the situation that I'm in. And maybe I could find about 3 or 4 different ways that I could come at it. And then I'm going to tell Brittany, you know, I got these. And then I'm going to tell everybody that, you know, this is what I'm thinking I'm going to do. And the whole time, have I ever asked God a thing about it? Have I ever told him, hey, man, I got this problem? The short answer is yes, but I'm playing to the, you know, sometimes I struggle a little bit to get there. It takes me a couple minutes. And maybe the same is true for you. But the problem is that sometimes I would rather trade the peace that transcends my understanding for going and just getting my own understanding. As a matter of fact, let me ask you one question, and I need to slow down. I'm talking about pace, and I'm in a hurry. If God gave you the option, really think about this. If God gave you the option, Elena, would you rather have peace knowing me and peace knowing that I've got you no matter what? Or would you rather understand your situation and understand the way out of it? You say peace, if we were honest. Elena's being honest. Elena loves God. Elena's being honest. But for the rest of us, if we were being honest, not based on our answer, but based on our actions. What's our answer? Do we want peace? Or do we just want to know how it'll play out? Because we live in the information age. Our society is obsessed with control. Obsessed. We control everything. Everything. From our phone. It's bananas. But we still haven't figured out how to control all of the outcomes of our lives. I wonder why we're so anxious. I love that he says, peace will stand guard. It's as if you choose to enter into God's presence. And you're sitting with God and he's like, hey, hold on just a second. Hey, peace, can you go guard the door real fast? Can you just go stand at the door? I got a couple bouncers. Hold on. They're going to go stand outside your heart. They're going to go stand outside your mind. They're going to make sure that nobody intrudes on this space. It's just you and me. That quiet place with God. God cares enough about you that he will put guards outside to protect you. He will hold you down while you kneel down and spend just a little bit of time with him. Such good news. Here's a part of the problem, though, man. Oh, is that sometimes I think instead of being guarded by God, Pastor Jerry, we would rather be guarded from God. We're guarded with God. We're like, look, God, I know that you could have it, but like I really have this desire over here. I really have this plan that I want to carry out. And if I let you into it, you might snatch that thing from me. And I don't know if I'm ready to let go of this thing yet. Or, you know what, God, you know my circumstance, but you allowed me to get here. It's your fault that I'm in this situation in the first place. And if you cared, you would have snatched me out of this situation and switched it up. But you're leaving me here, so you know what? I can't really talk to you about it right now because I don't know if you love me as much as I love me because you're letting me be here, and I'm going to throw this whole tantrum, this whole fit, thinking that I know best. I don't want peace. I say I want peace, but I wonder if I really want peace. And remember, I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. If you feel like I'm in your pocket, guess what? I'm in 70 pockets right now. I'm in everybody's pocket right now. Call me iPhone. I'm just here right now. And it's okay, because you know what? We're not there yet. But we're on our way. Paul wasn't there yet, and I'm about to get to Paul. I'm about to talk about Paul. Remember I said you can learn peace. This is learned. It's not just by prayer. Prayer is a part of the situation, a part of what's offered to us. Paul in verses 8 and 9 says a couple more things. Look at verse 8. He says, whatever is, and he gives you a list. And then he says, if there is, and he gives you a couple more things. And then he says, dwell on these things. Dwell on these things. Now, dwell is a fancy word for just like hang out. He's saying, I want your mind to kick back with these things. I need you to fill your mental. Protect your chickens, right? I need you to fill your mentality. I need you to fill your mind with these things. Now listen, I know you've got all this other stuff to think about. I know you've got all this stuff that you're trying to fix. I know you've got all this stuff you've got to solve. However, dwell on these things. You see, here's what I know about being anxious or being worried or having anxiety. This is part of the problem of being in the information age, is that we kind of know all the outcomes. It's like either I get the promotion or I don't. That's maybe a little easier. But like when the kid's out late, they got the car, and they're out past curfew. You kind of know the outcomes, but then you kind of don't, and you're just sitting in the house like, I'ma just bust them in the head when they get home. They are done for. But I really wish they were home right now. I'm so worried. I love them so much. Or when they hide, you know. Anyway, sorry. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about that. It was like, this is similar. And we are so caught up. We don't know, but then we do know, and that just causes us so many things. And he says, look, I know you could think about all the potential outcomes, but that's not going to lead you anywhere close to the presence of God. Or what you could do, oh my God, you could bring all those potential outcomes to God, which might lead you to being filled with some of his truth, some of his character, and you could ponder those things, you could meditate on those things, and maybe that might lift you up a little bit. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't just say, I want you to pray and I want you to ponder. He says, wouldn't you know it? Look at verse 9. He says, what you have learned, hold on to that, and received and heard from me and seen in me, these things practice. Paul said practice. We talking about practice? Yes, Paul's talking about practice. There are some things that Paul wants you to put into play. You could kind of make some arguments. It could be that the list in verse 8, those things to think about, you put those things into practice. That's a fair argument. It could be, Paul says, all the stuff that I've handed down to you, the kind of apostolic faith, the tradition, all the teachings, I want you to put those things into practice. They're very similar. Take your pick. What Paul's concern is that you might pray and then get up and go do whatever it is that you want to do. Or you might have a moment where you think on these things, but then you go and you do whatever you want to do. Paul says, when you've been with me, when you think about me, when you're caught up in all of the truths, all of the promises, all of the assurances, all those things that I could provide for you, something's got to give, something changes. You're not there yet, but you are on your way. That's what Paul is saying. And the promise that he says is not just that you will have peace, not just that God will give you his peace, but that the God of peace will be with you. And let me ask you a question. If everything that was going on right now that you are stressed out by, I'll give you my own situation. If my kids let me get out of the house on time in the morning and they were happy and they never threw a fit, just no tears, no yelling, no throwing toys, no hitting, no taking from your brother. I got a lot of things on the kid list, okay? I could just sit here for a while. If that was fixed, if we were in a house, if I knew when my sabbatical would be, if I had a person over all these things, if I had this conflict that was taken care of, if I had all of that taken care of, but I didn't have the God of peace with me, would my life really be all that much better, or would I just find something else to dive into to say, oh, the sky is falling? I would just find more stuff. Or I could learn peace. You can learn peace. It can be yours. For free 99, you ain't got to pay. There's more. Doesn't exist. You can learn this. I want to make a point of it. If you leave with one thing, I want you to leave with this. You can learn peace. You can learn it. I didn't have this before I preached a sermon, and I found this, and I'm like, I'm going to hold on to this forever. You can learn peace. Look at verse 9. He says, do what you have learned. When this word is used here, the way Paul intends it to be learned is that you have gained some knowledge by instruction. Like, you've been in the classroom, and you've been inculcated, and now you're ready to move. Go put it into practice. But Paul uses the same term a couple verses later. Look at verse 11. I don't say this out of need, talking about how they gave him support and he's grateful. For I have, what's that word? I have learned to be content. When Paul uses learned here, what he means, let me see. Oh, I have the definition. This is what the Greek lexicon says. It's not the only one. It's just the best. If you ask me, it doesn't matter. I'm going to just keep moving. To come to a realization with implication of taking place less through instruction than through experience or practice. Oh, my God. Paul says, I've put this into practice. I've made it my own. If you cut me, I'm bleeding this because I've practiced it. I have learned to be content. Paul didn't just meet Jesus and all of a sudden it was like, oh, I'm content. He may give that, but Paul here is telling on himself. Old Paul was a lot more humble than young Paul, but I feel weird saying that, but it is what it is. And old Paul said, listen, I've learned to be content. Not I've always been this way. Not I asked God for it and he gave it to me. But I have learned to be content. Contentment is the low side of peace. Joy is the high side. So Paul also says, rejoice in the Lord. Not in your circumstance, but in Jesus. And you can learn how to do that. Let me just give you one more piece. Paul meets Jesus just a few years after the crucifixion and resurrection. And Paul, which is like, let's say AD 35, Paul writes this letter probably around AD 61 or 2. That's like 2.5 decades. Paul's learned this. Now, if I tell you, guys, listen, if you put this sermon into practice in 25 years, you're gonna be who you wanna be right now listening to this sermon. But you know what the alternative is? If you don't put this into practice, who are you going to be in 20 to 25, 30 years? We're losing a generation to Facebook and identity politics. Faithful disciple makers are gone, caught up, because they weren't getting caught up in Christ. They get caught up in all this other stuff. Because some political figure wants to tell us, like, I've got all the answers. No, you don't, cousin. You don't. Vote. Be a part of civic life. However, Jesus, the U.S. will not last forever, and it has not been around forever, but Jesus and his kingdom will never end. So go vote again and again. But please know that voting is not learning. It just isn't. If you want to learn this, you can learn peace, and if you want to, then train. Don't try. When you get into a situation where you need peace, don't try to white knuckle your way into it. Don't try all of a sudden. Today, train. Do one peace push-up. Tomorrow, do 2 peace push-ups. The next day, do 3 peace push-ups. And then when a burden that is heavy and you don't know if you can bear it comes along, you'll have 30 days of push-ups behind you. And you'll be a little bit more ready. And guess what? If it crushes you, Jesus is strong enough to heal you. And your community can come alongside you. And you can train again. You didn't fail. You didn't try. That was just training. Hey, we don't take L's. We learn lessons, right? So now I'm going to get up and I'm going to do 31 push-ups because I got to be ready for the next one. And by the time you hit 60 or 70 or 80, maybe you would say, you know, I'm not quite there yet, but I'm not where I was and I'm still on my way. And that is what Paul says, and it's the promise that he makes to you. Let me give you one more thing, and I'm going to get out your hair, I promise. Let me give you one more thing. Paul says in verse 12, I've learned the secret. I've learned the secret of being content. He's taken shots at the Gnostics who were saying that you could leave all of like the material worries. It was basically Buddhism. Like it wasn't, but it was similar. You can leave all of this, detach from all of this, be less of an individual, lose yourself in like the universe, achieve nirvana. Like, don't worry about you. Don't worry about your pain. Don't worry about your struggle. What I love about Jesus is that I'm convinced there's no better philosophy. There's no better take. Nothing makes you more you, but also helps you to be a part of a family, but also helps you care for the earth, but also know that like Jesus is going to come back and just completely make it new. But also I know that I wait a second. I don't have to run away from what's hard. I don't have to be an escapist. I can press into the hard and know that Jesus is with me no matter what. It's like I'm liberated. I can't lose. And when Paul says content, the word is self-sufficient. Paul says, I've learned the secret of being self-sufficient, because that was the term that they would use. The other like mystery religions were saying, hey, do you want to be enough? Do you want to have what it takes? Come and follow us. We'll help you learn the secret. And Paul says, no, no, no. I've learned the secret to being self-sufficient. It's verse 13. And about your hair, I am able to do all things. How many of you would like to wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, I'm able to do all things. I'm able to face whatever God puts in front of me. I've got it. Paul doesn't have an affirmation. He has an assurance. No shade to affirmations. It's just that he has assurance that I'm able to do all things through him who strengthens me. Jesus being with you is your strength, and Jesus is giving you strength to keep going no matter what you face. And so this year, next year, the year after that, how do you develop impenetrable peace so that when you're 60, when you're 80, this could mark you? How do you get there? Practice God's presence. That's really all I've got for you. Practice God's presence. Practice God's presence by praying. Talk to him. Don't just know about him. Talk to him. But don't just pray. Ponder. Practice God's presence by pondering. Y'all thought I was going to let you out with that alliteration. You're crazy. What this looks like in community, pray for one another and pray together. When it comes to pondering, check one another's mental maps. How's your processing? How's your thinking? Are you believing lies? Actually, like, get into the nitty-gritty together. Don't just let one another get lost in all of the almost truths out there. And give one another truth. And practice God's presence by your patterns, your rhythms, your habits. This is what I'm going to be doing this week. I'm going to be reassessing. I am going to be practicing God's presence by praying, by pondering, and by practicing, or by my patterns, because I know I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. So am I practicing God's presence? Am I praying? Are those moments of anxiety signaling me to pray? And do I? I'm not above getting help. This is just my process. Am I meditating on God's truth, or am I thinking about all of the worst case scenarios and all the things that need to get done and all of what I'm going to drop if I'm not as productive as 17 people? Am I holding rhythms that are proportionate to my output, or does something need to change? That's what I'm doing. What are you going to do this week? I want you to join me. I want you to practice God's presence by praying, by pondering, and by assessing your patterns.
Thank you again for listening to the Disciple City Church podcast. Until we meet again, shalom.